BSI in the world. I'm John Batzler. Behind the Black. Happy birthday, Bob Zimmerman, who keeps the website Behind the Black. Your subscriptions, your donations, your attention, most appreciated, because we're going to the moon today. Bob's going to help me understand the return to the moon, says NASA. Well, hardly. We've been there many times. Lots of people have. And most recently, the Chinese were on the other side of the moon. So landing on the moon has become routine by many countries. And yet, Bob, a very good evening to you. This is emphasized by saying it's America returned to the moon, but not really. This is, as you've taught me, a private lander run by an organization called Intuitive Machines. How is that NASA? How is that the U.S.? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. Well, it's the U.S. because it's private enterprise and freedom, which is the basis of our country. Kind of forgotten that a lot of times. But so this is a case when NASA was the customer. They hired Intuitive Machines to build a lunar lander to bring NASA instruments to the surface of the moon, as well as other private payloads that Intuitive Machines sold on the lander. But it's, of course, this is getting to land on the moon appears to be very difficult, at least in our time. I'm going to talk about that next week, John, not this week. But Odysseus was the, I think, fourth private company to try to land on the moon. Israel had a nonprofit fail. Japan had a private commercial company fail, Hakuto R1. Astrobotic, another American company, failed a month ago. They didn't quite even get to the landing. They had a problem on the way to the moon, so they didn't even get to try. So Odysseus from Intuitive Machines was the fourth attempt, and it appears they've been successful, though I must emphasize there's a certain level of uncertainty.
All right, let me say, as an amateur, because I followed the course of this, I knew what time it was approximately, so I watched it online. There are three pieces that I can understand I don't get, all right? The first piece is an extra orbit. What did that mean, Bob? Why an extra orbit?
That's a good question, John. It turns out, and they were very nonchalant about just mentioning this as an aside on the broadcast, but it was actually a big deal. Intuitive Machines, as a company, had put in a laser system in Odysseus to track the ground and help the spacecraft land so it wouldn't hit a boulder. It appeared when they got into lunar orbit that that system had failed. It wasn't working. There was a secondary system that NASA had installed on the spacecraft. It's a redundancy, which is smart. And the NASA system was like everything else on Odysseus, an engineering test of a new type of system. And so what they did, they went around the moon one extra time. It gave them about 2 hours extra time to write up a software patch and upload it to the spacecraft. So what would happen is the spacecraft would, instead of getting ground data from Intuitive Machines' laser system, which didn't work, it would get that data from NASA's system and then would operate from there. And so that was why there was an extra orbit, John. It was good improvisation by the company because it does appear that this worked. But it does indicate that Intuitive Machines has work to do to figure out why its own system didn't quite function as planned.
All right. Mystery two. It lands. There's an announcement that it's on the surface of the moon, and yet no signal. Or no signal right away. The report was no signal yet. What are they doing? What's that mean?
Well, let's go right away. There was a delay for a period of about, 20 minutes, 15 minutes before they finally said, we have a faint signal, we are transmitting, so therefore we have successfully landed. And then they ended this live stream. And I wrote on Behind the Black is that, we don't exactly know what has happened here. We don't know whether it's been damaged. Why only a faint signal? For example, 100 feet off the surface, Odysseus was going to release a free-flying a probe called EagleCam, which had cameras on it, which was trying to catch an outside perspective of the landing. No images came back from that. No images at all have come back. We don't have any additional data. All they said eventually was that they have a faint signal. They're trying to refine that signal and then use it to better point the antenna dishes. And that's where we were left. That's when the stream disappeared. Now, subsequently, an hour or two later, Intuitive Machines announced that they have a better signal. Their spacecraft is upright on the surface. That's a big deal. And they are proceeding to try to download their first images. So that's all relatively good news, but the amount of information released is very sparse, and that tells me that maybe not everything is hunky-dory, though we'll have to wait and see. It could just simply be that the location at the South Pole, it's hard to gather data. It could be they landed in a place that's not easily visible to the Earth. Unknowns, we're going to have to wait and see, John.
Transmitting data from the surface of the moon to the United States, to wherever it's going, does it have a mediator in between, or is it straight all the way?
No, they're using, that's one of the things they actually did. They used the deep space network of NASA to do the communications. So I think Intuitive Machines was trying to use some of its own communication antennas. But they also, when they had trouble getting data, they asked the deep space network, one of the antennas in that system, by NASA, to see if it could get better information, and that worked. So there's always go-betweens in that you have to get the data from whatever antennas you've got on the Earth and then transmit it to the control center. And that's apparently what happened. They were improvising, trying to come up with better antennas, more powerful antennas to try to get better signal.
And downloading photographs, that's a lot of data compared to just a faint signal. So that would explain why we have no photographs. Does that make sense?
I have to say this. I'm going to talk about this in an essay next week when we know more about Intuitive Machines, so I can talk about that with knowledge. But, you know, the very first lander to go soft land on the moon, Surveyor, back in 66, it was designed to send back its first low-resolution image within a half hour of landing, and it did so. And that was to confirm the landing was a success. Why they can't do this in several days is a little puzzling, and it shouldn't be that way. You should get a low-resolution image almost instantaneously to know where you are, and then you get the higher resolution later. So there's some question in my mind about the design here. There's other questions that I'm going to go into in an essay next week, John.
All right, let's leave the moon and head to a neutron star, 1987 supernova, the nearest in more than four centuries. How close, Bob? Are we in trouble?
No, this was in the Large Melogenic Cloud, 180,000 light years away. But what made it unique in 1987 is it was the first supernova since the invention of the telescope that was visible to the naked eye. You could, if you lived in the southern hemisphere, look up at the Melogenic Cloud and see this bright star that wasn't there before. And that was what made it unique. And supernova 1987A, it occurred in January. That's why the A was the first supernova of the year. It's been studied now for close to almost 40 years as it's been evolving from the explosion. And Hubble's taken numerous images. You go to Behind the Black and you do a search for 1987A and Hubble. You will see lots of other Hubble pictures as this evolved over the decades. What they have always supposed is that when this supernova occurred, it's called a core collapse supernova, where the radiation pressure of the light is no longer sufficient to keep the gravity from making the thing collapse. And so it collapses, and it collapses down into a black hole or a neutron star. And that's when the explosion occurs. The question was, has it become a black hole or a neutron star? Data, indirect data over the last 40 years has suggested there was a neutron star buried in the center of this now. This is the story now. Webb's infrared data has confirmed the previous indirect data that the remains left over from the 1987 supernova is a neutron star at the center of this supernova remnant. There's still more work to do. There's still some uncertainty with that conclusion, but the data sure now points to a neutron star. And that helps. That'll help astronomers better refine their theories on what causes supernova and what happens when they occur to the star itself.
All right, we've gone from the moon to a neutron star, maybe, and now we're back to Mars. Bob has an image up that doesn't look real. What am I looking at, Bob? It looks like another one of those drawings from my science fiction paperbacks in 1962.
This is a picture of a rock very close to where Curiosity, the rover, is sitting on Mount Sharp in Gale Crater. And this is actually, what's funny about this to me is that this is a routine picture. When Curiosity takes pictures of rocks around it, since it got into the foothills of Mount Sharp, it sees layers and flakes like this that go out several inches, maybe 6 inches out, this very delicate flake. This is quite routine in this terrain. None of it would be possible on Earth. Not only would the wind and the rain and the atmosphere and the heavy gravity cause a flake like this to break off, the presence of life here on Earth would wear away at it. Just someone walking past would knock it off. And, you know, an animal going by would break it. Plant life, lichen on it, would break it off. And on Mars, though, none of those things exist. And so you get these very delicate, amazing formations on the surface. And that's one thing that's amazing. The second thing that's amazing about it is the many layers in this rock. And this has been consistent since they started to get close in Gale Crater to the mountain. Mars is a many-layered planet, lots and lots and lots and lots of thin layers. And, in fact, the thin layers here might actually be telling us seasonal weather and events year by year, much like tree rings. We can't know that now, and it'll be probably impossible to figure that out until we're actually on the planet doing real research in situ. But nonetheless, that appears to be the case, that every season laid down a new layer, very thin, and then the next year passed in a new layer, and the next year in a new layer. We could be looking at layers put down by water flowing, ice flowing, or maybe even wind blowing dust. It's just amazing, John, and it is alien. There's no doubt about it.
I had a thought when I first saw it, just came to it, that there appears to be evidence, if it was on Earth, of uplift, of geological activity, twisting the rock. You see how they're all parallel, you see?
Yes. No, you're absolutely correct, John. Yes, that's one of the subtle data points from this that is not immediately obvious, but you picked it up. That's correct. The layers here are tilted, and they're all tilted consistently. So it suggests that at least there's the few rocks around here got pushed up at the same way. Is that an overall layer process or just simply very localized here? I can't answer that question. Though the wider pictures of this location on Gale Crater suggest the layers are relatively flat to the gravity. And so we're probably looking at a localized tilt in this case.
Bob Zimmerman, happy birthday, Bob Zimmerman. Your subscriptions and donations are welcome. We're going space engineering. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.